Today's show is presented by Prize Picks. Go to prizepicks.com and use code PACKADAY for a $100 deposit match.
Minutes a day, 365 days a year. This is the Pack-A-Day Podcast.
What's going on, Packers fans? Welcome into an all-new episode of the Pack-A-Day Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Herman. You can follow me on Twitter at Andy Herman NFL. You can find the podcast at Pack-A-Day Podcast. Thanks so much for making Pack-A-Day part of your daily routine. We appreciate you so freaking much. We have a great conversation with Carmen Vitale coming up in just a little bit. Before we get there, we have to talk some Thursday night football. Things are getting really late, really early for the Minnesota Vikings. I talked with Paul Farrington and Ziggy this past week about the Vikings and basically said, I think this is going to get worse before it gets better. It got a lot worse on Thursday Night Football, a completely non-competitive performance from the Minnesota Vikings. The Chargers completely dog-walked them the entirety of that game. And I don't know what they're going to do moving forward. I believe they're going to go with J.J. McCarthy against Detroit. Spoiler alert, I don't think that that coaching staff and team is super thrilled about that idea at the moment. I think they saw what J.J. McCarthy brought to the table those first couple games. I just don't think they have any other option. It's not Max Brosmer. It's not, you know, Carson Wentz is certainly not the answer. We've seen that. I don't, even if they wanted to go quarterback hunting at the trade deadline, I don't know that they could. It is a colossal organizational mistake at this point in time to let Sam Darnold and Daniel Jones, and even Aaron Rodgers sort of slipped through their fingers. As Packers fans, we are not too disappointed by that, especially not having to see Aaron in a Vikings jersey. But my goodness, this is really ugly right now. And if you're looking at this Minnesota schedule, at Detroit, Baltimore, Chicago, at Green Bay, at Seattle, Washington, at Dallas, at New York Giants, Lions at home, Packers at home. Giants on the road is about the only quote-unquote kind of easy game, and even the Giants have been playing a little bit better as of late. Commanders at home, Bears at home, they'll have some winnable games, but if you told me Minnesota won only three more games the remainder of the season, I'd say, yeah, that probably sounds about right. If you're giving me 3.5, I'm taking the under easily. If you're giving me 2.5, I'll probably take the over, but I'd have to really question it. This is going to be a tough stretch, and really this season now just comes down to what can J.J. McCarthy bring that team. I know they're only 3-4. It's not like they're sitting at 1-5 or something like that, or 1-6, but this now very much feels like a three-team division at the moment. I still think it ends up being 2 with Green Bay and Detroit, but hey, Chicago, 4-2. And right now, had it not been for that late fourth quarter magic by J.J. McCarthy in that first game, Chicago would be sitting at 5-1 on top of the entire NFC. But like I said, getting late really early for Minnesota, I think they made a catastrophic mistake giving up on Sam Darnold and Daniel Jones, going to J.J. McCarthy probably a little bit too early, especially after the injury a year ago. I understood the decision at the time. It has backfired so far completely. I'll give them some benefit of the doubt. We don't know for sure what J.J. McCarthy, we've seen him for 2 games. It was 2 pretty ugly games, save for 1 quarter for McCarthy. But yeah, like I said, I think this is going to get a lot uglier before it gets better for the Minnesota Vikings. Now it's time. Let's talk to Carmen Vitale. You're not going to want to miss it. Stick around. All right, it is time to talk to our good friend, Carmen Vitale. You can find her on social media at Carmi V, of course, on Fox Sports Radio as well. Carmen, it is great to be chatting to you once again. How are you doing, my friend?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I am fantastic. I'm excited to chat Packers, NFL, all things craziness. At least we don't have a gambling scandal to cover in the NFL this morning, knock on wood. So there's at least that going for us.
Before you get too confident about that.
Yeah, I'm not super confident long-term, but today we don't have to, at least as of right now, we don't have to talk about it. So at least that's true. A good thing. Crazy things going on in the NBA, but thankfully not with the Green Bay Packers of the NFL. Speaking of the Green Bay Packers, they currently sit atop the NFC after Tampa Bay's loss this week. They are 4-1-1 in a very crowded NFC right now. What do you make of kind of this Packers team and where they stand currently in the NFC? We'll start there.
I mean, I guess that tie is looking pretty good now. It keeps your winning percentage a little bit better because there's just less, and then that on top of, I guess, having your bye already. But no, I mean, it's a crowded field, and it's only going to get more crowded, I feel like, as the season goes on. I'm not entirely sure we're going to get any more clarity because so many of these teams are, I don't know, like, I can't figure out who I trust this year. I think that's the best way to describe it. Like, I know which teams are good and I know which teams are not so good, but I don't know who I like trust to stay good and to keep their pace, because it feels like everybody is like, every fan base right now is complaining about, well, we didn't win the way I wanted us to win, or, you know, we just lost, you know, it was a one score game where we're two plays away from having such a better record. And it's like, and it's all true. It's all valid stuff that I think people are complaining about, but parity being at an all time high, this is what you get.
Yeah. There are some teams at the very, very bottom, which I think we kind of solidified this past week, that have plenty to complain about. The, you know, the Tennessee Titans of the world, the Miami Dolphins, the, you know, New Orleans Saints, et cetera. There's some not great football going on along that side of things. Everyone else is in this big pile of like, who are you? What are you doing? Yeah. Are you going to be good? In some weeks you look amazing, in some weeks you look terrible. From play to play, down to down, quarter to quarter, you don't know exactly what you're going to get. And I think over this next, I would say 4 to 8 weeks of the season, I think we're going to start to really solidify which of these teams are legit, which are for real, and which ones are going to be starting to claim some of those number one, two, and three seeds in the NFC, AFC, respectively. And I think this is going to be a very important stretch for the entire NFL, but certainly for the Green Bay Packers as well.
Yeah, I do too. And I mean, again, I think that this is still, the NFC North is still, to me, the toughest division to win in football, because you have the Lions, who do look like every bit the juggernaut that they were last year. And what does that mean, though? Come playoff time, they've been dealing with just a rash of insane injuries that you can't think, you know, like you can't scheme up past those injuries in the playoffs. We've seen that happen to them. But then, you know, I don't know, like the Vikings are one of those teams where you're like, how good are you? Are you really kind of a threat? And then obviously, like, we knew the Green Bay Packers were going to be in contention for this division, I think, at the very early goings. And I mean, the Bears have run off four straight. How seriously do we take them? Because they're not even playing good football right now, but they're still winning. So like, what does that say when they do start playing good football? If they start playing good football, I don't know. I think this division is still the biggest question mark, and is probably going to be the toughest to win.
One of the craziest things if the Bears just don't implode in the fourth quarter against the JJ McCarthy Vikings in week one, they're the number one team in the NFC. And
they convert one more, you know, touchdown versus like settling for a field goal.
Seriously. I mean, they had every right to win that game. They were clearly the better team and just kind of choked it away at the end. And of course, McCarthy and the Vikings found a way to win. But if it weren't for that, the Vikings are in dire straits and the Bears are on top of the NFC, which is kind of crazy to think about. As we look at this Packers game this past week, you mentioned it. The teams that are winning close, fan bases are not happy because it wasn't a big enough win. That certainly has been a little bit of the case in Green Bay this week, and just kind of how they've played over the last 4 weeks. A loss, a tie, a closer win than people would have liked against the Bengals, a closer win than maybe people would have liked against the Cardinals. What did you make of this Packers team against Arizona and finding a way to get a win at the very end there?
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's one of those things where I'm never going to complain about a win. And I think that the Cardinals kind of fall into that category of like, are they as bad as their record suggests? Are they, I mean, they have some really good talent, and you talk about like guys like Trey McBride and the way that they're so hard to scheme up against. I'm taking like a win is a win when it comes to that, especially when, you know, you're on the road at that point too. It's like, the Packers had all those issues getting out with their plane being delayed and stuff like that really matters, because again, like I've talked about this so many times, but the NFL schedule, like week by week, each team's schedule is down to almost the minute. And when you like lose hours that you're not supposed to, that means that you have less recovery time than you are otherwise would have at the hotel once you get to the West Coast. And, or like, you know, your meal times are kind of askew and you're hungry, and that like means your body is thrown into whatever, like, everything is just so detailed as far as those schedules go. So when you face delays like that, like, you know, you're like, oh, sorry, your charter is like delayed, too bad. But like, it does kind of screw with things, because maybe recovery that you would have otherwise done in Green Bay, instead you had like, you were like, oh, we'll just do it when we get to Arizona. And now you don't have that time. So like, there's stuff like that where like, you're overcoming things. And when stuff like that happens, I'm just kind of like, all right, you still squeaked out of there with a win. That's a win.
And I think we have such a way of looking at things when you look at the record and you see Arizona's lost 4 in a row, they're 2-4. And when you look at the Packers are heavy favorites in the game and things like that. If you look at every single game that Arizona has played so far, it's been a one possession game. They are 2-5 and have a point differential of -1. Like, everything has been super close and contested. And their DNA as of late, their scout report as of late, is that they usually lose it at the very end. That's kind of what they've done so far. The Colts and 49ers have been extremely similar, and the Colts and 49ers have played some really good football. And so that should have kind of been the expectation. Every game the Cardinals play is down to the wire, one possession game. So it's just are you on top of that one possession game? In this case, they were. They found a way to win at the end in a game that the Cardinals have played 7 times basically now this year. So I know that we look at the record and it's like, oh, we want to see this team, you know, beat them even better. But man, this is the exact same game they've played every single week, and Green Bay found a way to be on top. I'm struggling to be too upset by that.
Yeah, and I'm totally with you. Like I said, if we can't talk out of both sides of our mouths by saying, well, parity's at an all-time high, and then be mad when our team ends up winning, because it just means that, hey, like, you know, the playing field is pretty level these days. And so whoever comes out winning, you can't complain about it. That's what you're supposed to do. And however ugly it looks, you know, you can talk about the viability down the line, but that doesn't mean that this team still can't get better. And it just means that there's still a ceiling that the Packers haven't hit.
We talk about every single week how the margins and the margin for error is just razor thin. And Green Bay had multiple have to have it moments in this game in those razor thin margins, whether it's Rashawn Gary's forced fumble, a huge stop on 4th and 1, a stop on 4th and 2, a touchdown at the end of the game, even that field goal before halftime that really gave them just an inkling of momentum right before the half when nothing was going right for them. In those have to have it moments, they still found a way. And if they don't, and again, a game that's set up for razor thin margins, they would have lost, and they didn't. They found a way to get out of there with a win. So again, it's hard to be too frustrated by it. At the same time, I don't think this team is playing up to its potential as of yet. I think everyone would kind of say that would probably be the case. What I'm struggling with a little bit is, what is the identity of this Packers team so far? I'm hoping you know, because I don't know that I have a perfect answer for it so far. We'll be right back. Today's episode is brought to you by Prize Picks. Now, you and I get to make decisions every single day, but on Prize Picks, being right on those decisions can get you paid. Don't miss any of the excitement this season on Prize Picks, where it's good to be right. Time to start getting ready for Week 8. It's the big one. Aaron Rodgers faces Green Bay on Sunday Night Football. This one's going to be epic, and I'm already all in on Jordan Love in this game with a huge performance. Elsewhere in Week 8, I'm going to go with big games for Patrick Mahomes, Baker Mayfield, and if he plays, Lamar Jackson as well. Here's the best part. Prize Picks is the only app that offers stacks, meaning you can pick the same player up to 3 times in the same lineup. Want to pick more on Lamar Jackson passing yards, rushing yards, and touchdowns? Now you can pick all of them in the same lineup, up only on Prize Picks. So what are you waiting for? Download the Prize Picks app today using code PACKADAY to get $50 in lineups after you play your first $5 lineup. That's code PACKADAY to get $50 in lineups after you play your first $5 lineup. And don't forget that code PACKADAY. Prize Picks, it's good to be right. Guys, it's 2025. The days of going to the doctor for emergencies are over. No more waiting until walking it off for 6 months doesn't work, or your fingers are numb from texting, "I'm fine." It's time to take our health more seriously and get things checked out when we need to. That's where ZocDoc comes in. ZocDoc makes it easier than ever by helping to find the right doctor quickly and easily. ZocDoc is a free app and website where you can search and compare high-quality, in-network doctors and click to instantly book an appointment. You can filter for doctors who take your insurance, are located nearby, and are highly rated by verified patients. Appointments made through ZocDoc happen fast, typically within just 24 to 72 hours of booking, and more often than not, you can even get same-day appointments. I've already had family members who have used ZocDoc and loved it, and I'll absolutely be utilizing it on all my appointments from here on out. So stop putting off those doctor's appointments and go to ZocDoc.com/packaday to find and instantly book a top-rated doctor today. That's ZocDoc.com/packaday. Again, ZocDoc, ZocDoc.com/packaday.
No, I mean, I don't really either. And, you know, knowing that we were going to try and kind of identify this, I dove a little bit into some advanced metrics and I went on, you know, Next Gen Stats and trying to kind of quantify, you know, Jordan Love's performance. Cause, you know, you hear things, okay, so Jordan Love, he leads the league in a lot of major categories. He's like top three in a lot of major categories. So he's got like, well, I'm going to go look at my stats now. It's what, like his EPA per dropback, he has the third best EPA per dropback rate among okay. qualified passers. But between kind of like the run game being so like, this is a very balanced offense and the Packers already having their bye, like Jordan Love, actually his dropbacks are significantly less than any of those other guys that are in the top 10 of EPA per dropback, other than Lamar Jackson, who has obviously missed time with injury. And I think that that's inevitably a good thing because it does mean that your offense is balanced and you are getting so much out of Josh Jacobs, who, you know, he leads, like going into that game in Arizona, he led the league in rushing yards, rushing touchdowns, missed tackles forced, like all of these really great metrics that you want out of your running back. And I think that's where the Packers probably want to live, is again, creating this kind of balanced offensive attack. But it's interesting to me, like trying to specifically quantify what Jordan Love is doing, because again, those are really good metrics when you're talking about EPA. You know, that's a metric that is meant to kind of extrapolate what this one player is contributing to the offense, right? But it's like Jordan Love also, like he's doing a lot more with a lot less, like we talked about, like the dropbacks just aren't there because this is a balanced attack. And so essentially on just 122 completions, he's been able to have the production he has. And then that production can be like kind of further boiled down to the explosive rate that Jordan Love's passes are. Like has the second highest passing explosive rate behind only Lamar Jackson. But he's only eighth in individual success rate. So then you try to kind of explain that further where you're like, all right, is it just that he's going downfield with the ball and that's what's happening? Or is it that his receivers are giving him a lot of yards after the catch? And the answer is kind of yes. Like Jordan Love's short yardage percentage, as far as like when he's throwing in the short area of the field, that is the third lowest in the league. And he's top 10 in like deep passes, the deep passing, which I believe is 20 yards or more down the field. That's how NGS explains it or yeah. Quantifies it. But it's not as much feast or famine as you would think, because his yards per catch or his air yards per catch or air yards per pass, I'm sorry. I'm like 7.8, which is almost exactly middle of the road, which means that there is some yards after the catch happening by his receivers. He's got the ninth most, actually, of his passing yards are because of yards after the catch or yards coming after the catch. Who leads that category is interesting, and we'll get to him later. It's Aaron Rodgers that leads the category in yards and in the percentage of his passing yards that came after the catch. It's just, it's a really kind of convoluted way of saying that Jordan Love is being helped a lot by his receivers, but he's also, I think a lot of it has to do with the scheme and the decisions that he's making, because he is purposefully he's very intentional with where he's throwing the ball and making sure that his receivers do have opportunities to get yards after the catch. I don't think it's a coincidence that he's been helped that much, because, you know, at the end of the day, that's working. The Packers have a lot of explosive plays that are coming out of this, and whether or not that's yards after the catch, that's all intentional. And I think a lot of it has to do with Jordan Love. So when you're talking about the identity of this team, it's a well-balanced offensive attack where Jordan Love is very intentional and can read defenses very, very well with where he is placing the ball, and he's using that to his advantage. And it comes in the form of advanced metrics, but it also, you know, passes the eye test too when you see these guys that are given the opportunity and given the space to run after they're making these grabs. And again, that is thanks to the decisions that Jordan Love's making.
Yeah, I think so too. I think it feels like they're right there. It feels like they're making the right decisions. They're getting players in space. They have the run after the catch ability. They have the deep ball ability. They can take the check down when it's there. I think two things. I think the run blocking just needs to be a little bit better. Then get Josh Jacobs going at a little bit higher clip. He doesn't need much space. And when you get him that space, he's willing to do the rest, or he's capable of doing the rest. I think in this game specifically against Arizona, I thought there were more opportunities for Jordan to keep it simple and to just take some checkdowns, especially with Arizona playing so much split high safeties and just kind of conceding some of the checkdowns. There was some of it there. There's a great example on a play to Dontavian Wicks in the end zone. It's a third down play. The Wicks play is just not there, and Dobbs is sitting. It's probably a yard and a half short of the marker on third down, but he's just sitting right there in the middle of the field for a checkdown, and he can take that. And you know, potentially Dobbs is able to turn around, make somebody miss, or you just end up a half yard or a yard short and you go for it on fourth down. Instead, it's incomplete. They have to kick the field goal in that situation. There's another one where he tries to force one to Romeo Dobbs over the middle of the field, and the safety has a chance at an interception. It ends up kind of in a bang bang play. It thankfully falls incomplete. But there's another player, I think it was Emmanuel Wilson in this case, was just checked down right over the middle, and you can kind of take it and live to see another down. I think just a little bit more patience there from Jordan could go a long way, but I also don't want to take that ability for him to get the ball down the field and make those explosive plays away from him, because this offense is very dynamic when he's doing those things as well. So it's just a little bit more balance, but it just feels like they're right there. And just with a couple different decisions, a little bit better run blocking, it feels like they could take off and really be putting up, you know, 30 plus points every single game.
Yeah, I'm not going to go so far as say this, like they want this to be a run first offense at all either, because obviously you have a guy like Jordan Love at under center that you want to utilize. But I think that what this offense wants to create is just a lot of mismatches and just be very multiple in what they do. And I think that comes through with what they're trying to get going in the run game, and the fact that, you know, they do have Josh Jacobs, and, you know, he's doing what he can behind that line, which I think is gelling, you know, is just taking a little bit of time when you're rotating guys in and out of different positions along the offensive line. Like, it's going to take a little time to figure out, just, you know, get that continuity that you want. But I also want to point out too, just in the way that, and this is nothing new, obviously, with Matt LaFleur and the way that he's using his tight ends, the Green Bay Packers have the fifth highest rate of 12 personnel, with so two tight ends on the field. And I think, again, that's part of trying to be multiple, and that's trying to create mismatches. I think tight ends are such a wonderful way to do that, because of the fact that they can do anything on the field. They can act as extensions of an offensive line, like we've seen, or they can be a really integral part of the passing game, which came through in that, even though he didn't have the most catches in that Arizona game, Tucker Kraft had the most targets of any of Jordan Love's receivers in that game. And so I think that there is a really, again, intentional kind of effort to get those guys a little bit more involved, because again, that just makes you that much more multiple on offense. And I think at the end of the day, if you had to sum up their identity on offense in one thing, it's to be multiple as much as possible. We saw them try to do that last year, but with kind of the rotating cast of receivers with injury and with Jordan Love in and out of the lineup, that was never kind of achieved. But I think that that's what they're trying to do this year.
Yeah, I think that makes a ton of sense. Meanwhile, on the opposite side of the ball, Micah Parsons, pretty good football, and he's obviously been outstanding for Green Bay. There's also some rumors out there that Dallas would like to acquire a defensive end before the trade deadline.
Shocking.
I know, shocking. So is there the question is, do the Cowboys have, you know, seller's remorse, or are they just too tone deaf in the Jerry Jones case to have seller's remorse? Because they clearly should be having seller's remorse one way or the other.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say, is they should, but knowing Jerry Jones, they don't, because he's that delusional in thinking that he still made the right call. And I don't know that he'll ever necessarily concede that that wasn't the right call to make, because he's still holding out for, you know, those two first round picks that they got for Micah to turn into Hall of Famers, like it did for the last time they did this. So like, it's one of those things where even if that doesn't work out, I think enough time will have passed where like he'll still be off the hook, at least in his mind. But at the end of the day, you traded away the guy that leads the league in pressures right now. Micah Parsons has 41 pressures on the season. Again, leads all qualified pass rushers. He generated 10 pressures on 32 pass rushes in that game in Arizona, which matches his career high with his sixth game in double digit pressures too. So like, he's just on an insane tear, And yep. they come quick too. Like Micah Parsons also is second in the league in quick pressures, which I believe are like under 3 seconds or maybe under 2.5 seconds. I forgot how IGS quantifies that. But like his, I think 8 of his 10 pressures in Arizona were a quick pressure. They came under 2.5 seconds. Yeah, so 2.5 seconds is what they do. So like, and the fact that he's chipped, double teamed on a majority of those pressures of those pass rushes, it's wild. And Green Bay is still choosing to use Micah Parsons judiciously because he doesn't have as many run, he's not as many snaps in run defense as he's most of the guys that kind of he's put in these like top 10 lists with. So it seems like they are using Micah Parsons a lot in kind of obvious passing downs, trying to get him involved and still using him judiciously, almost in what I assume is a load management effort to kind of yep. keep him fresh throughout the season, because, you know, he did start the season with that back injury. Who knows if that's, you know, really all the way healed. I doubt it is. Nobody plays at 100% in this league anyway. But I think that there's again, that intentionality with trying to use him where he's most effective. And it's paid off, though, because, again, he is still leading the league in pressures and he's getting sacks. And it's made this Green Bay pass rush come alive in a way that I think a lot of people wish that it would have last year. The only issue is now is that the secondary isn't exactly doing what they did last year. So they're, you know, it's one of the, but there's still time for that to get going. I still believe, you know, turnovers come in or takeaways come in bunches. And that just hasn't happened quite yet, you know, with Green Bay only having 2 interceptions on the season so far.
No, and I mean, the interesting thing is I thought the coverage in the first 3 weeks was really pretty solid against Detroit, mm-hmm. Washington, Cleveland. And then the last 3 weeks, it's just kind of completely fallen apart, add in not really getting some of those turnovers as well. And it's been a remarkable, just good 3 weeks to bad 3 weeks. And hopefully they can get back playing better football. And like you said, get some of those takeaways. Listen, this is a 6-week sample size, and I know that this is lofty praise. I've got to see Leroy Butler, Reggie White, Charles Woodson, Clay Matthews, just some unbelievable players in their prime of their career doing some pretty nasty stuff to opposing offenses. What Micah Parsons is doing right now, I'm not sure anything is quite on that level. And again, he's got to do it for a season and even longer than that to match some of the things that some of those all-time great Packers have done. But through 6 weeks, there's just no stopping him. If one-on-one is just, you're dead on arrival. He just is going to win that almost every single time. He said this week, 8 out of 10. I think it might be 9 out of 10. It is pretty rare that anyone's stopping him one-on-one right now. 2-on-1, and he's just splitting those, still getting held, still getting pressure, and is still finding a way to disrupt. And even 3-on-1s, it's like, all right, sometimes you tip your cap in a 3-on-1. He still is getting a little bit of pressure on those, and now you're playing, 10-on-8 the rest of the way for the rest of your defense. It is truly remarkable what he has done so far. And to your greater point there, it's not just winning. It's winning with immediacy and just like constantly getting there in like the blink of an eye. Mm-hmm. And I can't say enough about how he has played so far. And I talked about this with Mike Wall a couple weeks ago too. It's one thing to be a special player. It's another to be a special player, have unstoppable effort. Like it just, the motor is constantly running hot, and to lead by example, to be a leader on the team, to by all accounts be a tremendous guy in the locker room as well. Like it's just checking every single box. I'm blown away by what he's brought to this team so far. We'll be right back. What's going on, everyone? I am so excited to tell you about this new game-changing product that I've been using before a big night out. It's called pre-alcohol. ZBiotics pre-alcohol prebiotic drink is the world's first genetically engineered prebiotic. It was invented by PhD scientists to tackle rough mornings after drinking. Here's how it works. When you drink, alcohol gets converted into a toxic byproduct in the gut. It's a buildup of this byproduct, not dehydration, that's to blame for rough days after drinking. Now, pre-alcohol produces an enzyme to break this byproduct down. So just remember to make pre-alcohol your first drink of the night, drink responsibly, and you'll feel your best tomorrow. Listen, I get it. I was on the fence about pre-alcohol initially myself, but I've now used it for bachelor parties, fall cookouts, and at a huge tailgating event, and I'm telling you, it's the real deal. And guess what? Football is here, which means more opportunities to get out there with your friends and celebrate the season. So before that backyard barbecue brew, post-touchdown mixer, or cocktail by the campfire, don't forget your Z-Biotics pre-alcohol. Drink one before drinking and wake up feeling great and ready to take on the next day and all that football season has to offer. So go to zbiotics.com/packaday to learn more and get 15% off your first order when you use code PACKADAY at checkout. Z-Biotics is backed with a 100% money-back guarantee, so if you're unsatisfied for any reason, they'll refund your money, no questions asked. Remember to head to zbiotics.com/packaday and use the code PACKADAY at checkout for 15% off. Make sure to support our partners and use that code PACKADAY.
Yeah, and just what it's allowed the entire defense then to do, or the entire pass rush unit. I mean, you think, all right, if Micah Parsons is commanding a triple team, then like you said, that leaves like eight other guys that like you only have to account for with, you know, your other 10. So it's one of those things where it opens up so much more. And we've seen that with kind of the pressures that guys like Rashawn Gary have been able to get and some of that interior stuff that's been happening. And especially when you talk about the scheme shift that happened under Jeff Hafley, where you are now a 4-3 defense, you're blitzing at the fourth lowest rate in the league, and you're still getting this kind of pressure. I mean, that is what Micah Parsons allows you to do, because you can get pressure with just sending four, which should theoretically allow you to keep a lot more guys in the backfield, in the defensive backfield. And it hasn't paid off yet necessarily in the forms of, again, takeaways, but I have to think that that's coming. And it's just a matter of kind of getting used to, you know, what's happening up front and being able to kind of take advantage of those situations. They're allowing the fifth lowest success rate as a defense in general. And obviously lowest is better when you're talking defensive wise. So yep. This is still a unit that is very successful right now, is being very successful right now, even if it's not getting the takeaways that maybe Green Bay fans got used to last year. But again, I still have hope that those will come, because you have so many good players on the back end of this defense that I refuse to believe that, you know, this is a rate that's going to keep up.
Yeah. Fingers crossed. That's the case. Before we get to Packers Steelers, and of course this big matchup with Aaron Rodgers, there is the potential for Christian Watson to return this week. He said he's going to play. Matt LaFleur in his press conference on Thursday kind of played that down and said that's ultimately going to be a medical decision. There could be just a little bit of not wanting to give away the farm before the game or whatever and tell Pittsburgh exactly what's coming. But if he does play, even if it's for a handful of snaps, it would certainly be a nice return to that wide receiver core, especially considering Jaden Reed's out, of course, and now it seems like Dontavian Wicks is going to be out for this game as well. They could certainly use a little boost from Christian Watson.
Well, yeah, and think about what Christian Watson gives you, too. He gives you that true kind of X receiver, the guy that can stretch the field vertically, that can go down the sideline, and that only opens things up, you know, underneath, and that can only add to, like, how good the run game has been. And again, we talked about how much this team wants to be multiple on offense, and in order to do that, you have to kind of threaten the opposing defenses at all three levels, and that's kind of what Christian Watson brings you, especially when you're talking about not having guys like Jaden Reed and Dontavian Wicks out there. So I think that would be great to get him back, and you wouldn't have to necessarily use him on an every down basis. Like, this is a guy that, again, if his value is stretching the field, then, you know, you can really limit kind of his snaps, but he can really, again, like, be very impactful with those limited snaps in that kind of role. So I'm looking forward to seeing if that ends up coming to fruition. And, you know, of course he's going to say he's playing. And I do think that the Packers are going to be, again, very cautious with him, just given his injury history. Like, this is not a guy that you want to rush back. But I would like to see him out there and just what this offense looks like, because again, I just think it opens up so much in that short to intermediate area of the field when you have a guy that can stretch a defense like he can.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. I think anything he can give you this week would be a really nice addition, especially again with some of those injuries at wide receiver and just adding a field stretcher as well. And there's some really fun stuff too. If you can get, you know, all of a sudden Matthew Golden, Christian Watson, Romeo Doubs, Josh Jacobs, Tucker Kraft on the field together. I think that has a potential to be a pretty potent group of weapons going against any defense right now. Of course, the big storyline this week is Aaron Rodgers playing against Green Bay. This, obviously his very first time ever trying to get the first win against the Green Bay Packers, his only team that he has not beaten in the NFL. The Packers have not won in Pittsburgh since the Bart Starr era. Everything seems to go a little bit weird and wonky when Green Bay heads to Pittsburgh. This has the ability to be a really fun game, certainly one that a lot of people have circled on the NFL calendar. What are you looking forward to in this one?
Yeah, I mean, obviously there's a lot of emotion, and you can never believe these guys when they tell you it's just another game. It's just not, because then, you know, these guys get game balled afterwards, like, oh, it was this guy's former team that we played, and here's a game ball, and well, and everybody's going nuts for him and whatever. You're just like, yeah, because this means something. Yep. So of course this is going to mean something. It's going to mean something to Aaron. It's going to mean something to the Packers. It means something to Matt LaFleur and to Brian Gutekunst, and it means something to Packer fans that, you know, they're able to say, hey, we're still okay without you. But I'm very interested, just like from a pure matchup standpoint. I mean, I mentioned it kind of how Jordan Love, his air yards per attempt, and how a lot of his yards are being made up after the catch, his passing yards are being made up after the catch. Well, Aaron Rodgers leads that category. His receiver, there is no receiver core that is helping their quarterback more than the Pittsburgh Steelers and what they're helping Aaron Rodgers with. And I think that when you get into some of the advanced metrics, you know, this is a guy that throws at the line of scrimmage, like more than any other player, more than any other quarterback this year. And he's throwing in that very, very short, clearly an intermediate area of the field, and kind of helping his receivers in that way. I think the decisions that he's making on where to go with the ball always factor into that. This is a guy that's seen everything under the sun as far as defenses and what they're trying to throw at him. But a lot of this is being made up with his receivers. And so I think if you can limit that as much as possible, if you can get to him quickly, which, again, we talked about how quickly Micah Parsons is getting off the line, his get off, the way that he is getting pressure, how quickly he's getting pressure, that's going to be key, because there's no one better than Aaron Rodgers at getting rid of a ball quick. So if you can kind of get to Aaron Rodgers before that ball comes out, or if you can kind of blanket the line of scrimmage as much as possible, that I think is going to be the key to this game and to stopping the Steelers offense. I don't know entirely what to make of the Steelers in general. I mean, they all of a sudden seem to be the favorites in the AFC North, because things have not gone the way that any of us expected for various reasons with those teams. But I think this is still a very winnable game, despite the fact, like what you just said, that the Packers haven't won. I didn't know that they haven't won in Pittsburgh for that long, since Bart Starr. Yeah. So I think that, you know, it would mean a lot for a lot of reasons, for a lot of emotional reasons. But I do think this is a winnable game for the Green Bay Packers, just from a purely matchup standpoint.
Packers favorited. I think that, like you said, there's going to be a lot of motion from a football fan standpoint. Again, this is just an absolute must watch, especially if Rodgers plays like he did on Thursday Night Football against Cincinnati, when him and Flacco were going back and forth. If we see a Jordan Jordan and Aaron, you know, showdown in this one.
Is this like the Unc Nephew Bowl?
It's something like that. Yeah, it's in that realm for sure. But no, I think this has the ability to be really, really fun. I'm nervous on this one for a variety of different reasons. Just the Steelers' ability to use their tight ends, Rodgers getting the ball out of his hands quickly, DK Metcalf, you know, bigger, stronger receivers on the outside of giving Green Bay troubles. You know, again, Green Bay, weird things happen when they play in Pittsburgh. Jordan has a propensity to have a ball that has the opportunity to be picked off, and the Steelers usually take advantage of those. Even some of the rushers, TJ Watt, Nick Herbig on the edge against the tackles, gives me a little bit of trepidation. But that said, Packers are favorites for a reason. I think the Packers are clearly the better team. But as we know, and as we've seen this year, that the better team doesn't always win these games either. This is going to, I think, come down to the wire. I think special teams could play a huge factor as well. And I just think there's a lot of very unique matchups in this one. Steelers have the rest advantage and they're at home. Just a lot of very little unique things in this one that I think just makes this perfect mixture of a great matchup, a lot of drama, a lot of storylines, and just should be a ton of fun.
Yeah, no, I'm looking forward to this game. Honestly, I was going through all these stats for like Jordan Love and stuff, and I wanted to kind of dive more into this matchup in particular. And NGS is so random with like when they release their insights and stuff for each matchup, and like this one wasn't up yet. And I was like, but I want it out. Tell me the fun things that like I can't look up myself. But I still think that this, yeah, like just for, again, a purely matchup standpoint, this would be a really good game regardless. And then you add in just the potential for Aaron Rodgers to get that last team in the win category, the beaten category. And you know, this being like, it was such a false start when, you know, he was hurt when he was still with the Jets and they played the Packers, and it was like everybody had circled that on their calendars forever. And then, you know, the worst had happened. So I'm very interested to see how this goes.
What a blessing for Aaron that he got to get the heck out of New York and that they didn't have any interest in him as quarterback. I think that ended up being a huge plus for Aaron getting to Pittsburgh rather than having to play for that Jets team again. I won't make you predict the game, but I will ask you who has the bigger performance in this one, Aaron Rodgers or Jordan Love?
Ooh. That's a really good question, because again, for all the things that we've talked about and how much these both of these quarterbacks are being helped by the team around them in so many ways. I'll go Jordan Love.
All right.
Passing of the torch. A passing of the torch.
In wrestling terms, you know, you when you are the older wrestler and you're facing the new up and coming wrestler, you always go out on your back and you're the one that has to take the pin, and the new guy gets to go and he's the new star. We'll see if this is, like you said, the passing of the torch, and you know, Aaron goes out on his back and now it's Jordan's time to shine, and we'll see if maybe this can be his catapult to his stardom in the NFL. I can't wait for this one. Should be a ton of fun. Carmen, I cannot thank you enough. Where can we find all of your great work, and any final thoughts you want to get in before we get out of here?
Yeah, no, just go to my social media on Twitter, on Blue Sky. I'm usually pretty active on Blue Sky on game days, and on Instagram as well. Follow me at Carmi V.
Yeah, follow her at Carmi V, and of course, Fox Sports Radio as well. Carmen, cannot thank you enough. We'll do it again next week, hopefully after a Packers win against Pittsburgh. And as we look ahead to a very daunting schedule, the Carolina Panthers coming up next, though, in Green Bay, an opportunity for maybe Green Bay to get a big win there. So we'll talk about that next week. But that's going to do it for us right now. And until next time, and as always, go Pack Go.